What's happening, Biscuit Babies? You have tuned in to The Biscuit, presented to you by HockeyFights.com. Got a special guest today, Mr. Colby Armstrong, former Penguin, Thrasher, Hab, Leaf, Red Deer Rebel. Used to crush dudes on the ice. He's crushing it on Sportsnet now. I'm very excited to talk to him. Before I get to Mr. Armstrong, just got a few things I'd like to say to you guys. Lucid Float Spas, Mount Vernon, Ohio, a sensory deprivation tank center. I'd like for you guys to go there. Obviously, a lot of you don't live in Ohio, but some of you do. The ones that do, go. Go see Chad. Tell him The Biscuit sent you. Save half off of your first float there. And he's got all kinds of different massages that he does too. I know people go, oh, dude, it's fucking weird to have, you know. No, Chad's the man. He's like 6'9". 250 pounds, he will fix your back. He works wonders. Show is also brought to you by Hairless Ape Conspiracies. And what does it mean to be a hairless ape? It's more than just a t-shirt and a catchphrase. It's a way of looking at the world, a way of seeing failure as an opportunity to improve past our one-time best, seeing hardship and tragedy as lessons taught in pain, sweat, and blood, viewing our small community as our tribe. And that's you guys. You guys can be a part of the Hairless Ape tribe. I just got some new shirts from them the other day. I really, really love the, it's like a gray blue We Hit shirt and, says Alphas Assemble on the back. And, that's what you're doing when you listen to The Biscuit. The Alphas are assembling. Go to hairlessapeinc.com. Use the promo code Biscuit10, save 10% off there. And, they're veteran owned, veteran operated. You can go listen to the episode I did with owner Sam Burns a few ticks back. Really great guy, really great company. Happy to work with them. And as always, ParkersPlatoon.org, Stanley Cup champion Scott the Sheriff Parker and his family have a nonprofit organization to help one veteran at a time. And you might just be able to hear more about that here soon. But until then, Colby Armstrong.
Now Probert, oh, Probert got the right hand.
He's loose with the right hand, and he starts to retaliate. And down goes Nylund, and the two of them are hammering each other.
Columbus, that hurt.
It's old time hockey, the way you're supposed to play. You throw a little lumber if a guy gets in your way. You play like Gordie Howe or Eddie fucking Shore. We can't all be Gretzky's, the loser Bobby Orr's. Hey.
The enforcer of all hockey podcasts. It's The Biscuit. It's The Biscuit. The enforcer of all hockey podcasts.
God help the fucking day if fighting's ever banned. As a country will stop working on some badness fucking can.
Hi everybody, it's The Biscuit Podcast.
Hey, you wanna go?
Yeah, okay.
Good luck, man. Good luck to you too, buddy.
Alright, Biscuit Babies, I'm joined today by 9-year NHL vet. Played with the Penguins, the Thrashers, the Leafs, the Habs. He's a current NHL analyst for Sportsnet. Had 36 fights over his career and over 400 career hits, buddy, Colby Armstrong.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me on. Good to be with you.
Hell yeah, man. How you feeling after them 400 career hits?
Yeah, I'm feeling sore today. Yeah, I wasn't a big guy. Like, I wasn't like a huge, you know, you see these guys that are 6'4", 220, especially, you know, before the game has really changed, and now these smaller slider players are more of the trend. But I'm more of a smaller slider guy. Really, I'm 6'3", but I'm not as big as these other guys that were 220. I was like 190, 195, but that was like trying real hard to put on weight at the time. Well, so it was. I paid the price, man. I played pretty. I guess a little reckless abandon in my game, and I had to stick around in the league and. You know, it was hard. It was definitely hard on my body for sure.
Well, that's really part of it, man, is, you know, like you said, to stay in the league, you had to do what you had to do. And I mean, if you were born 10 years later, dude, you'd be right in, you know, like a pig in shit now of being 6'2", 200 pounds, man. There were some big dudes back in the day.
Yeah. Shit, man. Yeah. Yeah. It's totally different. Yeah. And I mean, playing against the Flyers when I was here in Pittsburgh, you know, they had like Hatcher and Rathje and, you know, these guys were huge. A lot of, you know, clutching, grabbing. If they got a hold of you, it's different now. Or, you know, obviously the rule changes and the speed of the game is so much different. But, you know, it's just, like, I mean, you look around the league, like at our stars in our game now, and they, you know, zig and zag, and they're skilled, and they're fast, and they're real great athletes. I'm not saying the other guys weren't. It's just so different. Like, they're not like they're not paying a price like Mario Lemieux did, or, you know, like even Sidney Crosby when he broke in was totally different game and totally different, you know, style of play, and him being the young kid on the block. Now everyone's young. Yeah. Everyone's friggin' like 18, 19, 20 years old. So yeah, it's crazy how fast it's changed. It feels like it went by in a blink of an eye. But yeah, it's crazy. Like, just the style of play, right, of our game has, you know, flipped completely.
Well, I mean, I agree completely. I mean, look at the guys doing wraparounds now. I mean, you have a few you have a few famous hits where dudes got crushed for having their head down, and you're doing your job, and that was part of it. I mean, it seems like there's 10 or 12 a game now.
Oh, I'd be on, you know, social media would be trying to kick me out of hockey for,
you
know,
they'd be running you out of Canada, man.
I'd be public enemy number one, that's for sure. But you know, it's the way it was back then. And, you know, I don't know if it was just that we didn't, you know, now we know a little more about concussions and stuff, yes, but, you know, that's just the way it was. And you know, I see a lot of guys now like passing up hits.
Yeah.
Where I'm sitting there watching going, holy shit, I would have definitely crushed that guy. Dude,
you see him on, like, I'll be watching on TV, I'm like, oh shit, here it comes. You're just like, oh, nope, okay, nope. All right. Okay.
Good stick check. But yeah, you know what, that hit coming around the net, I actually, when I was playing in the minors, I spent 3.5 years in the minors when I was with the Penguins organization in Wilkes-Barre, and I played with a guy, Dennis Bonvy, who I'm sure you're fairly familiar with this podcast. Probably one of the best technical fighters I've ever seen or played with. He did it a long time. He was obviously a real tough customer, a good teammate. He wasn't, you know, the greatest skater, but yeah, he made his mark. I don't know. He might have the all-time penalty minutes in the American League, unless McGrattan might have beat him. But you know, he was a guy I saw do that when I was playing with him, and he tried to cut a guy off coming around on the, you know, guys come wide with speed, take the defenseman, kind of push him wide around the net. And I guess it's kind of like an unsuspecting hit when they try to get that wraparound. But as a winger, just back checking, just kind of reading the play and dropping down from your wing is like, it's a nightmare, really. It's a nightmare hit.
Yeah.
But I got a lot of guys doing it. And I saw Dennis Bonvy do it, and his timing was just off. Like, he just couldn't get the timing down to complete the hit, and I gave it a whirl a couple times, and I was just blowing guys up, and I was like, oh baby, this thing works pretty good.
Oh, you definitely had some crushing hits all that way, man, for sure. And I think one of the misconceptions,
you know, when I had I was gonna say, I hit some of these guys so hard though, like they're some of these guys were trucks that I hit, and I still, like, I look in the mirror sometimes, and I've got the old retirement package going now, like the bad body going. But I look in the mirror, like, my shirt off, and like my one shoulder is completely like down further than my other shoulder, just from, like, you know, the impact of the hits. Your body goes through, and it's, you know, there's like a car crash, you know.
For sure.
You saw like Reeves on Wilson the other night. Like, I think he knocked him out. It was a clean hit, a good hit. It's just a little late, obviously, but. I think the impact of the hit, Wilson's own head, I think, hit his own shoulder.
Yeah.
It was literally like a car crash. That's what kind of put him out in the air, that he landed on his head. It's just so violent when you're going full on with a guy like that.
I forget who Rogan was talking to, somebody. It might have been Pat Miletich, but literally his one arm is shorter than the other from his years of fighting. Like, his disc had been compressed so much on one side that his arm is physically shorter than his other arm.
Yeah, I imagine guys go through, you know, transformations. Like, you know, my uncle was a truck driver forever, and he shrunk in height from sitting in that chair bouncing around on the roads for so long that his disc compacted. I think he, I don't know how many, you know, centimeters or inches or whatever he lost, but he definitely shrunk. But I could see how that could happen. You know, you're used to doing something a certain way, or, you know, over and over repetitive way, it affects your body, man.
It's hard.
And, like, my neck had been sore for so long, I think because my shoulder, I'd always have to get treatment on my neck. It's just, you know, it's the price you pay to play a certain way and to try to, you know, hang around and, you know, be, you know, I couldn't be vanilla every night. I wasn't like, you know, I had to be involved. It allowed me, you know, I think I was a good player. Like, I was able to play with good players, but I had to play like my certain style to be able to play with those guys too.
I mean, and you probably liked playing a physical game too as well.
Yeah, I did. I did. I actually miss, that's one thing I miss is like the physicality of, you know, retirement now is just like, you know, you're in the, you know, real world. It's a totally different element when you're, you know, doing your thing and you're in the dressing room and you're around the guys. And,
yeah.
You know, the jokes are different at the office than they are in the dressing
room. I can imagine.
Yeah, you know, and like, you know, the physicality part of it also is something that, you know, just even getting in a scrum or even getting in a fight, even if you lose, you kind of, yeah, I don't know, you kind of miss the feeling of your heart beating like that or your adrenaline pumping through the roof. And
it's a constant reminder that you're alive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. It's like, I guess, riding like a roller coaster and you kind of get that feeling. I'm not like a real big roller coaster guy, like a fear guy going chasing that. But like, I don't know, I kind of miss that feeling a little bit now that I'm retired of being in the fight or being involved in that physicality or even competing like that. And, you know, you look at guys, I'm sure the same goes for MMA guys or boxing guys or football guys when they're out of it. Yeah, their bodies are okay. They're feeling it from years of abuse, but I think deep down, just kind of like your primal feeling of like being competing head to head against someone else, you miss that feeling.
Oh yeah, competing at the highest level for years upon years upon years, man, and then it literally just stops.
Yeah, like totally. Now I'm a dad.
Yeah, yeah. Once you're one season, you're playing, you know, in Montreal. Then the next year, you're a dad.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly, it happens that fast too. And it's just like, where did it go?
Yeah.
And you're trying to find something to replace it or hobbies or anything, but like nothing can replace like that feeling.
No, I can imagine, man. I wanted to ask you why you think there is this, a narrative where a guy like yourself who hit people or, you know, Tom Wilson, where they're like, oh, this guy's a piece of shit. Like he's a dick. When you guys are just doing your job and, you know, sometimes you do miss going for a hard hit. It's just, you know, going to be part of it sometimes. I don't understand why it has to come off that way because you guys aren't trying to hurt anybody. I mean, you never looked at somebody with their head down and went, oh, I'm going to hurt this guy.
Yeah, you just think like, oh, okay, perfect. I'm going to hit this guy.
Right.
And, you know, it's part of it. Like, you know, at the end of the day, when you pop a guy, even with a nice clean hit, you hope he gets up.
Yes.
Like, you know, you hope he gets up. But, you know, part of the game is that physical contact. And I think what's lost now in the game, and it probably starts at a grassroots level and kids younger, is learning how to protect yourself as well. My dad always taught that to me. Like, you know, even, you know, some of the, you know, topics I'm sure you guys even talk about, you talk about Miletic, some of these guys like MMA, like half the battle is learning how to defend yourself in situations. And, you know, you can learn all the techniques you want on how to throw a proper hit, but if you're on the ice and unaware in certain situations of where you are on the ice and if you should, who's on the ice and, you know, what position you're in, like you've seen guys reaching for pucks, like totally carefree, reaching for pucks in a situation going into a battle and not expecting a battle, not expecting a guy to hit you, not expecting to cut through the middle and absorb contact in that situation when you're going to a high contact area where everyone kind of filters back to, like, it's something that needs to, I think, be taught more than even more so than how to throw a hit. And for whatever reason, I watch a lot of guys, and when I see a big hit, I see the other side. I'm like, what the heck was the guy doing that got hit?
Yeah, just taking his time on the boards, you know, just having a good old day. I think that's why it seems so shocking to people now, because there is just a disregard. They're like, oh, well, nothing's going to happen to me. I'll just stand here in front of the crease. It's fine.
Yeah, and they expect guys to say, excuse me, and can I take the puck? Like,
yeah.
Listen, like, I know we talk about the game and we break it down, and, you know, there are incidences, and we know head contact, and we know concussions. We know all that stuff, but there's still, like, an onus on both, 50-50. There has to be a 50-50 onus on both. And my big thing is, I don't even know if I've ever heard of a league calling a guy going, hey, buddy, yeah, you put yourself in a really bad situation there. You're going to have to work on keeping your head up in other areas of the ice that are, you know, high impact areas that are danger areas for yourself and the way you play in your game. and no one does that. It's always the guy going to hit him, and the guy has no sniff, and he gets hurt, and then we have to come down on this guy. And yeah, you know, those are the rules now, but like, then everyone wants to kick guys out of the league. Like, it's like, relax.
Lifetime ban. Lifetime ban. Get him out.
Lifetime ban, yeah. You know what? I like Wilson. I really like Wilson.
I do, too. Huge fan.
You know what? Yeah, I like him. I think he's important. I think you know, the way he hits, he could change a little bit of the way he hits, maybe, because he's a big, top-heavy guy when he leans on guys.
He
hurts guys. And just, you know, staying with his knees bent a little more and might improve his shoulder-on-shoulder contact and stuff, but... You know, it's a lot of it's timing, and you know, if your timing's off, you see guys getting suspended, reaching for hits. That's when it's on the hitter. If you miss the guy, your timing's off, and you reach, you're gonna get suspended. You're gonna reach for a guy, you're gonna get his head, you're gonna clip his knee, you're gonna, you know, get into some issues. So, you know, there is certain situations, but I'd like to see, you know, that 50-50 onus on both, you know, cleaned up with just a little bit, or at least taught at the grassroots level, so kids are way more aware.
Dude, I think that's an absolute fascinating point. You don't hear that very much. I mean, I right now it's kind of blown my mind. I'm like, that really should be the onus. It should be, like you said, 50-50. Like, yeah, that guy hit him a little high maybe, but that guy also took no action into protecting himself. And it's like, yeah, everybody wants a whipping boy because it's easy to do that. But, you know, Capitals fans love Wilson. And I think Wilson's going to learn, too, when you have a guy like Reeves. It's kind of like the teacher.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to learn. You're not doing that now. Maybe you should get down on your knees a little bit, okay, especially here when you're in Vegas. And that is so intriguing to me. I mean, who wasn't tuning into that game that night? I mean, everybody.
Yeah, I know. And you know what I like about it? You know what I like? It's like, how many guys are there in the league that are of that, you know, cut? There's not many guys left in the NHL of that caliber of style that are like, you know, they're, you know, he's a lion in the jungle. Like you said, you know, when he gets against a guy that, you know, probably, you know, Wilson's outclassed. I think Wilson, I've seen him fight Reeves before. Obviously Reeves is a killer.
Yeah.
And he can handle himself probably the best in the league right now and skate and get around and play physical. He was licking his chops at an opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
To kind of get after a guy that has that reputation and plays that same way. And it was like perfect. It was like Gladiator versus Gladiator, you know. It was like,
yeah,
it was something that I think, you know, those guys relished him. Like, he relished, Reeves loved the fact that he could kind of bully around the bully. And it was, I don't know, it ended with Reeves making every single person that wanted to kick Wilson out of the game for hurting people, and then he lands on his face on the ice and gets knocked out, and all those same people, all the hypocrites on social media come out and go, good, yes, good.
Yeah, exactly.
Brain exploded, good.
Exactly.
Like, listen, are you for it or are you against it? Either way, and
it all depends for them, man. It all depends. It's all anecdotal, which is... It's childish. It's like, okay, just get on one side of the fence here. Sometimes you're just going to have to take it. Like, I mean, I'm sure you got hit pretty good a few times in your career. You don't, you get up and you're like, oh shit, that sucked. Like,
yeah.
You're not one like, oh, I want that guy to die or anything like that. It's not as extreme as people think. Like, I've been absolutely murdered in a football game and I got up and I just went, oh, I don't want that to happen again. I better get better. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And that's the way it is. Everyone knows what they're, you know, stepping on that ice, and, you know, someone could get a, you know, have a good line on you and take it. You know, that's what happens oftentimes. And yeah, it's I guess it's just part of the world. It's going to keep rolling. It's going to keep going around and around and around with hockey, because it's a fast game. Crazy things happen. And, you know, guys are playing for their jobs and guys don't want to get beat. And guys want to win, and, you know, there's individual that goes into the team as well, and it's going to, you know, be a constant circle of it happening. So give us lots to talk about, at least in my job.
Well, for sure, and that's another thing going back to the Reeves and Wilson game. It's like, hey, linesman, get out of the way. This is what everybody paid to see. And then, two, it makes your guys' job easy. You get it there at Sportsnet on the night, and Reeves just made everybody's job easy.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, I mean, it's yeah, we saw it the other night too. It was Lucic hits Hamonic, Blassem.
Yeah.
Clean hit, great hit, Lucic. And then I forget who comes after him to try to fight
Peluso.
Peluso, yeah, just called up. you know, he's going to come in. He's chirping with Cassian in the start of the game and warm-up. So I was like, all right, here we go. We got some old school guys, you know, cut from the same cloth type of guys looking for a little hunger out there. And they decide to go. And these is like Lucic. Like, this is Lucic fighting with like a guy that's like can handle himself as well. And as soon as it kind of starts getting going, boom, the linesmen are in right away. And, you know, so either you got to let them, I think you got to let two guys that are willing to go. It's not like they didn't want to do it.
Right.
Let them go or just get. Just get rid of fighting.
Yeah,
just get rid of it.
Yep. That I think that's what's just gonna happen, and it's they're working their way to it. And like you said, Peluso got called up that night. This is a way for Peluso to make some bread. Like, hey, let me show you what I can do. Let me get at least a shot at this, guys.
Yeah, and he had a good game too.
He was really did.
Physically, he got ran over actually by I forget, one of the defensemen stepped up and popped him pretty good coming out of the blue line. He scored a goal that was disallowed because he was in the crease and interfered with the goalie. And then he goes after Lucic defending his teammate after he gets absolutely wallpapered by Lucic. Like, if you're getting called up, that's a heck of a game for him to have in the amount of minutes that he probably played. So, you know, and then when he gets his shot to go Lucic, it gets broken up right in, you know, 5-10 seconds into the fight. So, you know, that's the way the league is now.
Yeah.
I think as much as they try to, you know, keep fighting down, it's been down quite a bit, obviously. It's almost eliminated pretty much. But if they're going to go, I guess it's another way for the league to kind of say, hey, we don't want any fighting. It's for the linesmen just to get in there and stop it right away, too.
And that's the Battle of Alberta, too. So it's kind of expected. Like, just let it go a little bit that night. But like you said, it's the way it's going and the way it is. Now, this is something I wanted to ask you, you know, being an analyst now and a guy that used to crush dudes, there seems to be a narrative, and I think particularly in Canada, like when I listen to Canadian broadcasts, you know, being down here in the States, it's like, oh, there's a hit, there's a fight. It's like, and I really don't think that's the case. And when you would hit a guy, like a good solid hit, did you expect a fight coming at you?
Yeah, I think I was aware. Like, when I hit a lot of guys, too, then I got jumped a lot.
Yeah.
You know, that was kind of what happened. And I expected it, though. Like, I expected guys to stick up for other guys. And I expected the same, you know, the other way if someone hit one of my guys. And I know everyone goes, why should a guy have to fight for after a clean hit? And it's not because, you know, it's not because, you know, the guy wants to do it, probably. It's because you're supposed to do it. It's your teammate. And when I was in junior hockey, I was, you know, coached by Brent Sutter in Red Deer. And
yeah,
we had a couple guys that were pretty tough, like Jim Vandermeer, for example, was our captain. He could handle himself real well, but he could play as well. And we kind of had this, like, thing where he preached to us pack mentality. He didn't want us to, you know, we didn't have guys that just went out and straight up fought. But we played hard, and we could play any way you wanted. We could beat you 6-5, or we could beat you 1-0, or we could, you know, slug it out with you as well. We had a lot of hungry guys, and we had this pack of wolves mentality. And I think that's, you know, what is lost in being a part of a team. You know, we look at these guys and go, why does this guy have to get it? Because he's on a team.
Yeah.
And his teammate got hit, and that's what you do. Not because you want to, it's because you're supposed to. And, you know, I think the understanding of how a team operates is lost on some people and not looked at fully in the full picture. And, you know, I appreciate a good clean hit as much as anyone, but I also, you know, expect someone to let me know, you know, if they don't, I go, I wonder what's wrong with that guy. Why didn't they, you know, maybe their team doesn't like that guy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I'm sure that happens too, man. Now, what goes through your mind, you know, or if anything, after you hit a dude and you turn around and you see Aaron Asham coming at you?
Yeah.
Like, what do you have time to think of that? Like, oh shit, here it comes. Or is it just like, all right, I got to get these mitts off. It's go time.
Yeah. I just like, just hug him as close as I can right off the bat. Well, I know who I was on the ice with, and I knew something was going to happen probably. And I think I hit Van Riemsdyk on that one. Aaron Asham, player you're talking about, he came after me, but you know, he could have probably like destroyed me off the start when I was turning around and he was coming right at me. And you know, he grabbed me and gave me a chance to have like a fair fight, kind of. Although he did have the major upper hand on me, and he's way tougher and can throw him.
No, Asham's a monster.
You know, monster, yeah. And he's a Red Deer Rebel alumni too. So when I got to Red Deer, I was hearing like Aaron Asham stories like all day long about how the kind of beast he was. for the Rebels, and obviously a few years of pro against him before he got to Philly as well. But I just like, I was like, okay, this is way out of my weight class and toughness class. But I knew, like, I knew something was going to happen. And when I saw it was him, I was just like, okay, try to get in as close as I can. But then he just started throttling me. I got beat up a lot, man.
Hey, man, it happens, man. You know, you win some, you lose some, man. The fact that you stuck up for, you know, teammates and played the way you played and held your own, I mean, at least accepted the consequences of the way you played. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I had to. I think I had to. I think that was, like, kind of the honorable thing to do. And I also think it kind of gave me, like, a little bit of street cred with the guys, too, because they always saw that I would, you know, I'd be willing to go after. So if, like, someone came after me after I hit somebody or something happened, I kind of had that, like, X factor a little bit in my back pocket that I was willing. And, you know, I think that can, you know, be a little bit of a game changer as well. If you're not the toughest guy, at least guys know that you're willing. And it kind of goes, okay, if I go over there and say something, I know he's going to go. And I better be ready to go myself. So it kind of, you know, there's games within the game. And, you know, it kind of was a little bit of a, I guess a little bit of an X factor for me with the way I played. Because I don't think I didn't see myself as like a tough guy. Like I played hard and I played like a tough brand of hockey. But I wasn't like a great fighter or anything. But I was for the most part, like I picked my spots here and there as well with when some of the heavier guys wanted to get after me. But I was fairly willing, you know, to engage and be involved. And I think that kind of intimidates some guys that are on the line of if they want to do it or not, you know, to take the next step.
Is that mentality something you learned because you played in the dub and it's the House of Monsters?
Yeah, and it's I don't know if it's still like that, but it was starting to fade a little bit from the stories I heard when I got there. But it was just kind of the way I'd always been, you know, I always had my nose in there and involved when I was a kid. And then obviously with Brent Sutter as my coach, and, you know, he taught us how to be pros and play what it would take, you know.
Was he there all 3 years that you were there?
Yeah, I was there my whole career in junior with him. So to have him and, you know, just recently retired and coming in to, you know, teach us what it's like to be in the NHL and, you know, taught us what it's like to be consistent, play like pros and how you have to play and, you know, what you have to do to be successful individually. You know, it was big for me to learn that way. And
was he a player's coach, you think?
It was hard. He was hard on us.
Was he?
He was demanding of us. And I think that's what it's like at the NHL level, though. You know, I think it's
got you guys ready.
That way. Yeah, he got us ready for sure. And, you know, it's when I got to the American League, you know, as a first round pick, I was kind of like coming in thinking, okay, I'm a first round pick. I'm going to be maybe like, I got to show my offensive ability. And as it went on, it was funny to know that, you know, as you put as much into stats as you want and you want to feel good, and the teams are watching you for more than what your stats are. I did have like fairly good stats through my career in the minors and got better and better every year I was there, to the point where I finally got called up and never went back down to the minors. But people look at you as an overall game of what you can do. And I think, you know, for my game, when I'm involved, when I was physical, when I was in your face, when I was a rat and tough to play against and, you know, noticeable every game and not like this vanilla up and down guy, you know, that's what they wanted out of me. So, you know, for me to get to the next level, I had to be like that every day. And trust me, it is hard. It's hard on your body. It's hard mentally to get up for every game to be that guy. Not that I wasn't that guy. It made it a little easier for me because it's just the way I was. But it's something I realized right when I got there that I had to do this to stay up in the NHL because I did not want to go back riding the bone rattler in the
wild. Well, fucking A, man. 78 points in 156 pims 1 year, and then 68 and 115 the next year, dude. Like your boys at Spittin' Chicklets will say, you know, not a big deal, man. Jeez. And then 21st overall, dude. How's that feel? I mean, that's awesome. Amazing, dude.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was, our teams were really good in Red Deer, and we, you know, Brent Sutter, he took me as his first year's coach. I was a rookie that year, and there was like six or seven of us that were rookies as well. So we had 16, 17-year-old rookies, a lot of guys. And he kind of weeded out a bunch of guys, and our team just got so good eventually. And then my draft year, we won the Memorial Cup.
Nice.
So it's like you're on the big stage all the time. We're number one ranked in the country, so there's a lot of eyes on you all the time. So, you know, I think that obviously helped get me and push me into the first round is playing on a good team and a team that won and a team that played a certain style of hockey as well. I think, you know, scouts like the way we played and like that kind of Red Deer Rebel, Brent Sutter style hockey. And, yeah, it was awesome though, to be drafted first round, go up on the stage and do all that. Seems like forever ago. I think it was like 2000 or 2001. It seems like forever ago now.
Did you get to enjoy it? Did you realize like what a big deal it was at the time, or was it just like another, you know, part of your journey into the NHL?
Yeah, it was just like, I was kind of clueless to the whole thing. And, I got to go to the draft the year before in Calgary, and I had just got an agent at that time, and they were like, oh, we'll take you down here and show you what it's like. So I went to the draft in Calgary to see, kind of watch how it happened. But it's still like kind of crazy to, you know, process it, like, what, you know, this is great. And what does it mean? You know, what happens? And then I'm like, okay, Pittsburgh drafted me. Where's Pittsburgh? I knew of like Mario Lemieux and the Penguins, obviously, but like I had no clue like where it was on a map. And even more so knowing that I'd have to play in the minors, because it was rare that a guy made it to the NHL out of the draft, maybe the first overall pick at the time. And, you know, I looked on the map like, where the heck is Wilkes-Barre? And I'm like, holy geez, where am I? The first time to go there, I was like, okay, this is where I'm going to be. And I spent three and a half years there without getting called up, to finally getting called up. And man, it was awesome. My first year, I got called up and played a line with Crosby after like 12 games into the season. And we just caught fire.
Yeah, dude. Now, what, like going back to the Dub, what do you think it is about that league and that breeds tough guys like that? I mean, as far as it goes now, they're the toughest remaining out of the, you know, the Canadian Hockey League. But I mean, if you chirp somebody in the OHL, you're getting suspended. But you go back and go through the timeline of some of the guys. I mean, like, you were in there, like Eric Goddard and Colton Orr and Robin Big Snake, Grant McNeil. I mean, there were some just killers, dude.
Yeah, Steve and Pete. There's like Jim Vandermeer's aren't. Like, we had some nights where, you know, Jim had to go at it with some pretty big customers, and he was probably one of the tougher guys in the league at the time as well. But Goddard was so tough. We played those guys so many times, and Stephen Pete was in Goddard was in Lethbridge. We were in Red Deer, and Stephen Pete was in Calgary at the time too when I was there. Used to be with the Rebels, but went to Calgary, and so we had to play those guys like, you know, eight times a year or whatever, and it was like,
that's a lot.
Holy smokes, Jim has to like possibly fight these guys that many times. Like, it's a lot of times, and there were some real tough customers. I remember the one guy I hated playing against. I don't know if he made it anywhere. I should hockey DB him, but his name was Dean Serdashny, and he played Swift Current. Big, big, old school, tough defenseman. Like, I think he was their captain. Huge cross check beast. Could chuck him too. Like really tough. Just a rock solid old school Western League D man. And I always thought he was like so tough to play against. I hated playing against him. You just, you know, he'd punish you every game. But I think just the reason why it's like that is just because, you know, all West is so big. It's, you know, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta, BC, and it just scattered so many small towns and guys that had to like play on all these little teams growing up, and just the way they were raised and just the way hockey was. It's just it was just different than, you know, the populations in other areas where, you know, these guys were growing up, that you literally had to like battle to make some of these teams that growing up as a kid and come out of these areas where there's 2,000 people to make a team, to play on a travel team, to grind and, you know, go places. So you're getting these like, you know, bone raw, badass kids coming out of these communities and farming towns and, you know, middle of nowhere that are making it to the Western League that only know one way to do it.
Oh, for sure, man. I was up this morning, was watching David Kozakow videos with my coffee, just going, oh my God.
Yeah, he was crazy, man. I remember I had this kid on my team when I was in midget AAA. I got called up for a game. I was Bantam at the time, and I got called up for a game with the Saskatoon Blazers. They're the AAA team. There's two of them in our town, but we were playing in, where was it? It was in Regina, and Kozakow was on the other AAA team. And we had this guy on our team named Chet Kamrud, and they were just chirping the whole warm-up. Like, Chet was like a little stocky, tough guy, and Kozakow wanted a piece of him. And we got in the room for after warm-ups were done, and he said to the coach, Chet goes, hey, I'm not going to play today. He goes, what do you mean? He goes, I'm fighting Kozakow. And then, this is mid-to-triple-A, you know, like, you got to rip off helmets and go at it. And they went at it right right away, right off the bat. It was crazy. Like, that was my first kind of taste getting a midget AAA of going, holy smokes, like, this is like another level of from Bantam to this. It was crazy with a lot of the big boys on these AAA teams. So that was kind of my first taste in it and my first time seeing David Kozoka.
Oh, shit, dude. Do you guys from the dub hold that reputation as you go up, or does it finally get to the NHL where it's like everybody's just a beast?
Yeah, everybody kind of just evens out as you go through. And, you know, I remember at the draft, when I was at the draft, somebody, one of the scouts, I forget what team it was, asked me if I think the Western League's the toughest. And, of course, I was like, yeah. And he's like, well, what about, you know, and then he started rattling off all these heavyweights that came from, like from the queue.
Yeah.
Like Brashear and Worrell and all these guys. I was just like, oh, my God. I was like,
okay.
Like, I was like, damn, I think maybe our overall game is the toughest. But yeah, there's some tough customers coming out everywhere, and a lot of guys from other leagues that just played really tough as well. And, you know, obviously I didn't play against any of these kids, some of these kids coming out of college too, that have, you know, some spit to their game, you know, they're doing pretty well too. And it was like an eye opener once you get to pro hockey with these guys coming from all over the world.
Yeah.
And playing on your team, it's like, wow, you know, they're breeding hockey players like this everywhere.
Yeah, my cousin played in the NBA, and I asked him, I was like, you know, from, you know, high school to college, he's like, it's pretty much, you know, the same. I could still dominate some games. He's like, but dude, college to the NBA is like, I learned a completely different game. Like, it's just everybody is so strong and fast and good that it's just like, you got to go balls out at all times.
Yeah, and like, I think, you know, most guys in the NHL, even the fighters, the guys that we had that were, you know, our tough guys, our fourth line guys, you know, the average, you know, hockey fan would say he's a plug probably. It was growing up, wherever he played, likely probably the best player on his team.
Right.
Even likely in junior was one of the better players as well, and was just good at doing stuff and doing what they did and were willing to do it. And, you know, for the most part, did whatever they could to stay in the NHL, and that's just the way it was. And, you know, and then I hear people, I see people go, oh, this guy's a plug. Oh, look at this guy. He plays 4 minutes a night, plug. I'm like, this guy, if he strapped up with you in beer leagues, and there was no fighting like there is in beer leagues, he would dance you. Absolutely dance you.
Yeah. Dude, I don't know how many arguments I've had, and I stopped engaging people in it, though, where, like, they'd go, yeah, Scott Parker's a piece of shit, can't skate. And I'm like, dude, he would be a figure skater around you. You have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's just that's how good other guys are, though, is that they're in that position. They're still, like, pretty good, darn good players and still, you know, smart enough to make, you know, plays to play in the game, you know, throughout the game and make those, like, 10-foot give-and-go plays. And you know, they're just really big, scary dudes that are, you know, hungry and willing to do that job, which was really tough.
Yeah, I look at people on Twitter, you're ludicrous to think a dude that played in the NHL for 10 years can't ice skate.
Yeah, I know. And there, you know how many guys were in the minors?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, trust me, if that guy wasn't good, he wouldn't be there. If he wasn't the, I think being the toughest also helps as well.
Right.
But, you know, there's a lot of guys that were really tough that people never even heard of that were in the minors. And I was like, holy cripes, get me out of this league. that never made it to the NHL. And you had to be able to play, you know, you had to be able to play. Otherwise, you sat down there for a long time. And, you know, some of these guys that people wouldn't even heard of would have had nightmares about them.
Well, the AHL back then, too, I mean, a lot of guys used to call it the jungle because, like you said, there's a lot of tough guys, you know, because they were still calling up enforcers back then. So those guys were just trying to chuck nucks to get a look. So, I mean, if you're just trying.
And this is before the veteran rule as well. You know, you can only have, like, 4 veterans in your lineup of, like, 250-plus games. You're considered a veteran now. And you can only have so many guys, so they wean out. It's a develop more of a developmental league. But when I cracked in the American League, there was, you know, guys with mullets and cross checking the heck out of you that were hungry to, like, get after you every game. It was a totally different league when I came in, as it is to when it changed to when I left. They changed it after I left, after that lockout, that whole year that was sat out. They changed it to that veteran rule. A lot of veteran guys, 30-plus year old guys, career minor league guys, lost their jobs and had to go looking elsewhere to find a spot to fit in.
Yeah, man. Now, we touched on this a little bit earlier in the conversation. I mean, you know, there's a big onus on the locker room and the boys and, you know, that relationship you guys have, you know, playing professional sports. And I was just wondering if there's any kind of, I mean, even a taste of it that you get you know, being at Sportsnet and being around people that are still like involved with sports. I'm sure it's at a much lower level, but do you, you know, get flashes of it? Is there pranks and like things like that? Or are you guys, you know, having a cold one, or is it just kind of show up to work and see you guys later?
Oh yeah, we got a good team, and that's what I was kind of excited about doing that, because, you know, we, like, when I first went in there, I thought, you know, this would be a good opportunity because you're part of a team, you know, we're part of, like,
right.
we have our NHL group, and it's, you know, the Kiprioses and the Friedmans, and it's these guys, so we are kind of like a team, and we have guys, obviously, that played hockey as well, and Kelly Rudy, and Kipper, as I just mentioned, and Duck McLean, who was a GM and coach for a lot of years, have been around the game. It's just, it's nice to be around those guys. But we also want to put on a, you know, a good show, and, you know, you work together as a team to do it. And, you know, we're pretty close and hang out, you know, quite a bit. You know, when there's long nights and a lot of games, and because of the time change being out of Toronto, we're in there till, you know, almost 1 o'clock in the morning. Some nights you see those guys on Hockey Night in Canada doing the, you know, the early game, the 7 o'clock, and then get the Vancouver game or Edmonton game at 10. And you're in there working until after hours comes on with big Louis DeBrusque and Scott Oak. So it's
a lot of coffee.
Yeah, it's a lot of coffee, a lot of hockey you watch, and keeping up to date on everything. But it's a good team vibe atmosphere in there for sure. Even some of the people are just on, like, I didn't know how it all operated, started doing the job. The camera people and the production crew and all those people are, you know, they're all a part of that team, and it's, you know, everyone's kind of pulling in the same direction to put on make a good show, and, you know, find things to, you know, educate viewers or show viewers some cool things or how good our players are and how good our game is. It's been really fun. I've learned a lot. It was harder than I thought getting into it, but I'm glad the people there are awesome people.
Hell yeah, man. And you're very good at it, man. I'm always happy when you're on, and I'm glad that there's an outlet for, you know, professional athletes to be around professional athletes, because you guys aren't normal people. You know what I mean? Like, you just aren't. It's not, you didn't live a normal, like, 9-to-5 life. You guys are like, and I say like guys that go to war, but obviously there's a big extreme difference. But I'm saying those guys, they know something that no one else will know. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? And the big thing is we've literally been 12 years old our whole lives. And, you know, it's, you know, playing the game you love, you feel like you're a kid every day, and you go and you have coffee and you laugh and you joke, and it's just a different environment than, you know, say going into, you know, an office environment and sitting at your cubicle or, you know, whatever you may do 9-to-5, like you said. So yeah, there's one thing I miss from hockey, the biggest thing I probably miss, and I just was hanging out with Scotty Hartnell and Jordan Tutu a few days ago, and it's the team dinners the night before you played the game, and it's, you know, that 2 hours a day routine where you go to the rink to practice and work out, and it's more than that. It's just like hanging out with the guys, like having that schedule, that time, and you know, that's an adjustment just now where you're kind of home all day.
Yeah,
you know, or you just go and, you know, you do the game and work. So, you know, I'm lucky I got a job where I'm still involved in hockey, and I get to talk about it and hang out with people that are still involved in the game, and you know, it's been a, you know, really great for me, but I still miss, that's the one thing I miss. I don't miss, like, putting on my equipment and playing as much. I do miss a little bit of, like, you know, the competitive juices flowing for sure, but I just miss, you know, you miss hanging out with the guys and kind of, you know, being 12 years old all the time.
I would imagine, I mean, like, I would imagine, like, a lot of hockey games probably blur into one thing, but there's probably certain dinners or certain, you know, hangs with the boys where you're like, oh, that was special.
Oh, yeah, all the time. Those are like... Those are the best times. And anytime you get together with a guy you used to play with, you never go, oh, remember when we, you know, I assisted on like 3-year goals. That was awesome. We always talk about, you know, it's always about, hey, remember that time in the training room when we, you know, threw a towel on, you know, on a guy's head or something, you know,
right.
Something stupid, you know, like a stupid prank or baby powder. Like, it's always something so dumb, or a dinner out in Tampa Bay where we dared a guy to eat, like, you know, all this food, or, you know, it's just
silly kid shit. Yeah.
Yeah, silly goofball stuff that you kind of always hang on to and have laughs about.
Hell yeah, man. I just got a few more for you here, Colby, and I'll get you on your way, man. You know, being an analyst there at Sportsnet, I wanted to ask you, there's all these ideas for a new playoff format, you know, adding teams, which I think is the worst idea ever, or, you know, going back to the 1-versus-8, which I'm a fan of. Is there one that you look at that you go, that's what we need to do. That's because it seems like something's awry right now.
Yeah, totally. And you know what I think? I think the big thing is like, what are they discussing? Like, kind of like a wild card game. They want that right. Wild card. You know, that's been something that's discussed. And I think, you know, GMs and, you know, the governors are saying that they don't want, by the sounds of it. I think a lot of talk is picked up into what you're liking is the 1 versus 8. I think that makes the most sense because, you know, for me, you get to the playoffs, you play, you know, you battle like a beast all year and ups and downs and injuries and, you know, it's so much is put into establishing yourself in a position to be, you know, the best team in the league or put yourself in the best possible position heading into playoffs, where that doesn't, you know, necessarily matter anymore because I look at, like, you know, for example, the Penguins a few years ago were almost not going to make the playoffs. They were kind of out. Then they were in. Then I was like, maybe it'd be smarter if they're in a wild card spot because they could play this team first. You know, it was like,
right.
And then you could jump over to the other division and play out that side of the pool because, you know, it's just the way it's set up that you could kind of create your own path if you really wanted to play the game right. Create your own path that might be an easier one to get there where, you know, we see some of these teams going head to head in, you know, the first or second round. It's like, how the heck is this happening?
Yeah, exactly.
How is it this? These guys should be meeting in the conference final. You know, it should be built up to that. And, you know, so I would lean with you probably like to see the 1 versus 8. I know it's maybe more travel and might be a little harder with guys in the West, especially, but I think that makes the most sense for me.
Cool, man. Now, I'm sure you've seen, and I know you've seen it in person, but that one photo of Sidney Crosby's leg that's been floating around lately.
Yeah.
Is that dude, like, how I imagine him, just constantly working out, watching tape, like, the ever-professional, like, just, how is Sidney Crosby? How, like...
Yeah, well, he's a professional, yeah, for sure. He takes, like, unbelievably good care of himself, and you know, is, you know, now that he's, you know, 31 years old, it's crazy. He's 31 now and, you know, is really aware of, you know, his how much he works, his workload, and when to rest properly and how to take care of himself. Or when I started with him, he took every morning skate, every optional skate we're out there. The coaches had to kick us off the ice. And, you know, that's what you do when you're young and you have all that energy and you're right. Fresh and, you know, he's played a lot of hockey and understands, you know, what it takes for him to be good and what it takes for him to get through a season as well where he knows, you know, okay, I got a little bit, you know, look at the schedule here. I truly think that he looks at the full picture.
That's a what lot I think, more man. Now.
Yeah, and he's so smart. And, yeah, his legs, I used to call them Christmas turkeys. Cause those things, like, his leg, his one thigh, though, is his one, like, and his the muscles over his knees are as big as both of my legs when I put both my legs together.
Dude, I have nightmares about them.
Yeah, like they're huge. I played with another guy, Marty St. Louis, another guy, just yep. Massive leg.
Just guys, he's basically a walking thigh.
Just a walking drumstick. It's wild to see those guys, and you know, for me being able to play with Sid, I think a lot of it too is something that a lot of people, you know, maybe look over and go, wow, this guy's so skilled or so good. But I think genetically, just, you know, you look at genetics of why McDavid's so much faster. Like, how? He's like, he's a human being. How is he so much faster than everyone? And he's just, I think, you know, genetically he has it.
Yeah.
Genetically has those quick twitch muscles better and they can, you know, obviously he's been blessed.
Yeah, there's something different about him for sure.
Yeah, like he's been blessed, and Sid's the same way. I think genetically, like his body, his build, he's like, what, 6 feet tall almost. Like he's just, you know, it sticks perfectly in his hand. Like his center of gravity's perfect. He's worked a lot, obviously, on his hip flexibility to be able to be powerful, even when he's off balance a little bit, where he's still strong in situations to get through guys. And it's, but at the same time, like his, like the way he's built, the way his body is, just like made to play hockey. He's like perfect hockey player.
For sure. And that was something I was talking about earlier in the season when people were going, oh, the Penguins are toast, the Penguins are toast. I'm like, if you think Sidney Crosby is just going to let them have a losing season, you're insane.
Yeah.
Like, I watch him pour it on as this season goes on. He's going to start reminding people he's the best in the league.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what? I think, you know, where they're sitting right now, they just played, what, I think game 31 last night against Boston. But for them... I think they have a veteran group that's been through a lot that they know, you know, to the detriment of of their fans and maybe the league talking about them, that they know that they're now in third place in their division.
Yeah.
They're in a playoff spot. They know they just have to get in the playoffs, and then that's where it really matters. And, you know, the first couple rounds, you're likely going to have to play really good hockey teams. So it's a situation where I think they know when to peak and know when to get to their game. And I think everyone around here, I'm in Pittsburgh, I do games for the Penguins as well here. I think everyone's kind of waiting for them to throw that consistent game together right now. But I think, like I said, deep down, there's a veteran group. They brought in a guy like Matt Cullen again back here. Just, you know, they know where their game has to be at. They know if they're good or bad. And they know that their game needs to be better right now. But they also know that they're in a playoff spot as well. And they're kind of floating in a good spot here through the early part of the first half of the season.
Does Sidney get, like, I don't know. I always think he's like a Terminator in my head. Like, is he like a fun dude? Like, does he get silly with the boys, or is he just like just a hockey player? He's like, I know he's a dude, but I mean, is there any like weird side to him where he's like really enjoys like you know, table hockey or something like that, or like loves, you know, Dumb and Dumber the movie?
Oh yeah, he loves all that stuff. Cool. He does. He's a regular guy. Yeah, he's obviously lives a pretty private life, which keeps people, I guess, guessing about what he's really like.
He's brilliant about that, man.
Yeah, he is, and he's you know, he's a guy that I've was lucky to play with and get to know and spend a lot of time with, and now moving back here in Pittsburgh for the last, I guess, 3.5 years, it's been awesome to watch him play and see how he handles himself, you know, with his teammates and, you know, with his team. And you know, he's obviously like grown a ton, and he's like so patient as well with, you know, when things are bad, to understand how the ups and downs of a season goes with like a panic button situation, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, like he's a guy that likes to play bubble hockey and hang out with the boys and have laughs, and he likes guys ripping on him, I think. And, you know, I think that's, you know, you always seen him gravitate around, you know, hanging out with, you know, for example, like guys like me or like Bill Guerin that he had in there,
mm-hmm.
For a few years. And he likes being around those kind of guys that, you know, push him a little bit and treat him the same as you would any other guy on the team. And, you know, that's all he really wants at the end of the day.
Oh, because I'm sure a lot of people don't, you know, put him on a pedestal. So it is probably guys to be around guys that are just treating him like a dude.
Well, especially now, right, with all the young guys.
Yep.
So he's 31. So can you imagine being a kid coming out of, like, you know, the minors?
Well, they had posters of him on the wall.
I know. So it's like, I mean, I remember coming to play for the Penguins. There's John LeClaire and Mark Recchi, and, you know, we had Sergei Gonchar and Daryl Sador and Stanley. We had Stanley Cup champions and guys that I, like, grew up watching play that I loved, and I'm a talkative, outgoing guy, and I walked in there and I was like, holy god, I don't even know how to handle myself right now. So, you know, you walk into the room with the likes of like a guy that's going to go down in history of our game, and, you know, the same breath is, or up there in the same conversation, top five player in our game.
Yeah.
And to be able to come into the room and possibly have to play on a line with him or have to like interact with him, and you're kind of like in awe at the same time. So there's a lot to take in when you walk into a room with the, you know, the Balkans.
For sure, man. Hell yeah. Well, I don't know if you know this or not, but we are officially presented by HockeyFights.com now. So I wanted to ask you, do you use HockeyFights.com at all?
All the time.
Cool, man.
I love HockeyFights. I follow them on Twitter. I use them all the time to check out stuff. I was saying they're going to have to switch their name to HockeyScrums.com with the way things have been going. But, yeah, that's been a site I always looked at. And you know what? That's a site that players looked at when I was playing, too, to scout other guys as well, to go on and check out their fight tapes. And when guys really had to know that they were getting into something, and check out some of the guys' tendencies. So it was a tool actual players used as well.
Hell yeah, man. Well, Colby, again, thanks for your time, bud. I really appreciate it. Just tell the listeners where they can find you on social media and all that good stuff.
I only have Twitter, @armdog.
That's the way to do it, man.
Twitter, and that's all I have. I have nothing else. I got my wife uses everything else, so I sneak on hers if I ever need anything, but I'm simple.
You're the man, dude. Thank you so much.
All right, Willie. Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it.
Yep, have a good day, bud. Well, that was fun as fuck. Thanks for listening, guys. Again, that was Colby Armstrong. Appreciate all the support. Please go to iTunes and rate and review us. It really helps the show out a lot. 5 stars. You can put, you know, fuck the biscuit. I don't care what you put in there. Just give it 5 stars, please. And we're everywhere. Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, soon to be Pandora, as long as I don't get denied, which I don't intend that happening, but it could. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter and all that good stuff, guys. And make sure to go to www.hockeyfights.com. Go watch some fights. Fix your boring ass life. Have a good one, guys. How many fucks?